Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live and happy birthday, America. I've been looking forward to this show for a while. Two wonderful guests, wonderful Catholic PhDs, all that, but great Catholic men to reflect with us on, well, for one thing, what a Catholic should make of America, how America's doing. All these questions that have come up in recent years about is America flawed from its very founding? Can a Catholic really be a good American, or must we be critical Americans? All that stuff. We're going to get into it, but with a celebratory mood, I hope, because, you know, whatever a country may be in its theories and in what it's also just a land with farms on it and people on it. And it's a great gift that God has given us that we have a land and a people and all of that. So whatever else we might say, we have to say thank you. And thank you, Lord, for 250 years and more of this American country that we have and get to enjoy and get to be a part of. And a lot of you are probably, I'm really grateful you're here with us, because I know there's hot dogs cooking, there's probably apple pie, there might be a baseball game on, all these American things that we do as we approach the 4th of July. And you got all that going today, and you're spending the time with us as well. So thank you so much for being here with us. Our guest the first hour, Dr. Chad Pecknold, is Associate Professor of Historical and Systematic Theology at the Catholic University of America. He's a noted scholar on Catholic social teaching, American civic life. He's written extensively on what it means to be both Catholic and American, looking at things in some ways like as the Pope might, because they are both aficionados of the great St. Augustine. He's also got a recent course launched on the Diocese of Arlington, for the Diocese of Arlington, called Christian Citizenship and the Virtue of Patriotism. Dr. Chad Pecknold, thank you so much for being here with us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Happy 4th.
Well, happy 4th. Yeah, I wonder, how are we doing? Let's get the theologian, the Augustinian theologian's view. How are we doing here in America?
Well, I mean, I think we are reflecting on just that question, that 250th year of our nation is a chance to reflect on that. How are we doing? Where have we come from? What are our flaws? Can we mend them? Do we have a future? That's precisely the kinds of questions that the 250th raises for us. I mean, it's a bit like saying, how are you doing? You know, how are you doing? Well, I'm okay.
I'm okay.
I have some good things and some bad things going on in my life right now. But
Right.
I think that's true about the country too. We have suffered a lot. America has suffered a lot. And we've, I think, through that suffering in recent years, I think we have been reflecting a lot on what is America. What is it? What is this country? Where does it come from? What are its strengths? What is good about America? What are its flaws? I mean, in our songs about the American Republic, we often ask God to mend its flaws.
Yeah.
So it has flaws, right? But we also recognize that in some sense, God's, at the very least, we can say God's permitted America to exist, right? And God is in this sense the cause of America. America is a providential nation. And so what is God's purpose for America, I think, is a real live question. And and Catholics, I think, have a very important role to play on that question, because Catholics are maybe unique in in American Christianity, in actually thinking that the purpose that God has for America is greater than just the Pilgrims or the Puritans.
Yeah. Well, one thing I have to say that the Catholic Church is good at, I think it's a skill that is very deep in the bones of Catholicism. And I actually don't know if it's present in all of the manifestations of Christianity, is discernment. And what you're asking is a question of discernment. What is God's purpose here? We hear a lot of assertion about God. God's doing this, and God has... I mean, I think especially our Protestant brothers are really good at the assertion of God's intent. But what Catholics are really good at is discernment. And, well, I'll tell you what. I'll go this way with this question, because it does seem to me that since about the turn of the millennium, there has been an intensive Catholic discernment going on about America. And I alluded to some of it in my introduction, which is some people, there's a serious question in the Catholic mind, is the American thing flawed from its founding? Are you familiar with this line of questioning? And what do you make of it? Like, it does seem to be a new line of questioning among American Catholics.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could go back to the 19th century, and you can go back to the Catholic bishops who said that the founders built better than they knew.
Oh,
right. That's a famous the 19th century bishops talked about the founders as having built the Constitution and the offices of government in a way which was better than they knew. Now, that's a really interesting formulation, because you can take it either way, right? They did really well.
Yeah, but they didn't know what they were doing.
but they didn't know what they were doing. And that some of the things that some of the reasons that they did what they did were not good, were flawed, right? Maybe they had Lockean ideas about social contract, or maybe they didn't have an adequate understanding of human rights as, you know, related to obligations and moral duties. There's all sorts of ways in which you could say that there were flaws in the founders' visions, but all differentiated, right? Because there are so many different founders who contributed. The dominant narrative in which Catholics have asked this question about flawed from the beginning, I think, takes inspiration, however, from St. Augustine. Because if you recall, St. Augustine's City of God is taking up an argument about the greatness of Rome, the glory of Rome, right? And pagans want to restore the great paganism of Rome because they think Christianity is to blame for its decline. And Augustine responds and says, no, Rome's founding was flawed from the beginning, right? Rome begins with Remus and Romulus, right? Rome is named after Romulus. And what does Romulus do? Kills his brother, just like Cain killed Abel, right? So the greatest kind of story of the Christianization of the Roman Empire that Augustine tells in the City of God is kind of shot through with this code of understanding that our political community is somehow mirroring the story of creation itself, which begins with a fall, Adam and Eve, fall, the fratricide of Cain and Abel, and Cain founds the first city, right? So the first city is founded in fratricide. That's like the elemental flaw of every political community in some sense. And so Augustine sort of establishes the way in which, just like every human soul is stained by original sin, so are political communities stained by original sin. Now, that does not, just like in the human person, it doesn't negate our goodness, right? Our intact goodness is not obliterated by original sin. Some Protestants believe that, right? But Catholics don't believe that, right? Original sin, you know, it weakens our inclination to virtue. It obliterates the original harmony that we had with God, but it leaves intact the goodness of our nature, the goodness of being body and soul, for example.
Yeah.
The goodness of having an intellect, right? So similarly, then you can draw the analogy out to political communities, that every political community, in Augustine's view, is going to, in a sense, be touched by original sin, but also have a kind of intact goodness that is willed by God, caused by God. And I think this is very helpful for thinking about America, because I think we can get Manichaean about it. We can think it's all good or it's all evil, or the flaws are there from the beginning and we'll never get out of it, right? It's just totally deterministic. But I think the more balanced approach is to say, of course there's flaws in the American, in America's life. And we know that there are flaws in American life, but there's also this intrinsic goodness to that I think that we should be grateful for, a goodness which has supplied a lot of goodness for generations and generations of families. And I think that kind of that subtle, as you put it earlier, Catholic discernment about what the nation is, what its strengths and weaknesses are, and how it can be lifted up. I think this is also something that the Catholic is able to think about in a better way than others, is, okay, God has permitted this country to exist, has blessed it in all sorts of ways, despite its flaws, but also maybe wants something better for it than we can currently imagine.
Yeah.
That there's a way in which the Catholics can actually be the ones who raise up the common goodness. Aquinas has this nice line there needs to be an uplift of the common good. I like that phrase, some uplift. There's the common goodness, you know, everything that's good comes from God at every level, right?
Yep.
And then you think about, well, what would raise that goodness up? What would raise my goodness up? What would raise my family's goodness up? What would raise my country's goodness up? And to what end? To the city of God, right? What would raise us up? And I think the Catholic has that discernment in them. They can see that more clearly because their vision is bigger.
Dr. Chad Pecknold, our guest. Man, break came already. I have to say, he has utterly defeated me in his attire and the decorations. He's celebrating. I went with blue, but I couldn't find anything red, white, and blue. But you've got the full...
You got your cups behind. Your cups are red and white behind.
Oh, thank you so much for finding. Look at you discerning the good, even where it's obscured. We'll take a quick break. Right back with more conversation about what to celebrate, and maybe where to go as a people as we celebrate the 250th birthday of the United States of America on Catholic Answers Live with Dr. Chad Pecknold. More right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Do you have a question but prefer to ask it privately? Catholic Questions can help. Go to CatholicQuestions.com to ask your question online, email us, drop us a letter, or give us a call. Longtime Catholic Answers Live apologist and author Jim Blackburn or another Catholic Questions apologist will be happy to assist you. Catholic Questions proudly supports Catholic Answers Live, so visit us at CatholicQuestions.com today. That's CatholicQuestions.com.
This week, EWTN will commemorate and celebrate the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence, featuring Mass and reflections by the most trusted Catholic voices on radio. Join us for this historic milestone and our pledge that we are one nation under God. EWTN Radio, your source of truth that allows Catholics to grow in their faith and recognize the true mission of the Catholic Church.
Welcome back. Happy birthday, America. That's what we're celebrating today on Catholic Answers Live. Is it right? Was the country born on the 4th of July with the signing of the Declaration? It feels to me like in many ways it's already a country, and then it becomes a country, and then it becomes even more of a country with the Constitution. I guess you got to have a birthday. Is this really the birthday of America?
I mean, I think that's such a good question. I mean, it's obviously a day in which we're celebrating, you know, the Declaration of Independence, and we're celebrating, you know, the birth of this republic that is not under the jurisdiction of the English crown, right?
Yes, I see.
But you raise you raise this very good question: is when does the nation begin? And I think about this a lot because Pope Leo XIII in the 19th century reflected on this in a letter on, called Longinqua, that America has this pre-written constitution history that really matters. It matters for everything. You know, it matters for our mythology about ourselves, about Christopher Columbus and the Mayflower, and all of those stories are about the Spanish crown. And the Spanish crown was Catholic,
right?
So you have, you know, if you're in San Diego, so you, like, you see it all over the place, the Spanish missions, the Franciscan missions, and, you know, the most beautiful buildings, I think, in California are all from Franciscan missionaries. Leo XIII reflects on this, and he reflects also on the French crown. So prior to the history of America, the birth of America, is something which precedes the Constitution and precedes the Declaration of Independence. And it's seeded with, yes, the British crown's present as a sort of Anglican Church of England, my own Commonwealth of Virginia, very much shaped by the Church of England, the Spanish crown dominating the South and the West, the French crown dominating the majority of the middle of America, right. And also the Louisiana. And did you know that in Maine, you had French Jesuits that dominated Maine? It's hard to imagine, but French Jesuits once dominated.
I did not know
Maine.
That. No, those the ones that came to Canada, they hit Maine as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. They were all over Maine. And so the country is sort of seeded with all of these Catholic memories and stories and histories and the names of our towns. If you go around the United States from St. Augustine, Florida,
right,
to, you know, to all the way over to San Francisco, California, St. Francis, California, or cities that are named after the Eucharist, Sacramento, California, or nearby San Diego, where you are. Los Angeles is named actually after Our Lady. San Jose, you even have cities in America named after the Holy Faith itself.
Santa Fe,
New Mexico. Right.
And Corpus Christi.
Corpus Christi. And St. Louis, Missouri. And you could go on and on,
right,
like this. And I think if we think about the pre-written constitution, or the unwritten constitution, which precedes the written constitution, we're actually much older than 250 years. And I think that's also part of discerning what the future and purpose of America is. At some point in the future, I think those names will have greater meaning again.
Yeah, I certainly hope so here in California. I mean, boy, California is just Catholic everything. It's got a Catholic name, but we are...
I call it vestigial. There's a vestigial structure in place for a different America in 250 years could look very, very different to us,
yeah,
and yet wildly the same.
Yeah, well,
right?
That's right.
You could, because you have all of these vestigial structures in Louisiana and, you know, in California and New Mexico and in Missouri, and, you know, lakes named after St. Joseph. And I think all of these things make me think about how important it is for Catholics to lead right now at the 250th, that Catholics are in leadership right now. And I think in government, but also in culture, you have Bishop Barron now regularly, you know, dominating sort of public, the public square, in a way that maybe we haven't seen since Fulton Sheen. And so I think the 250th is really a time for Catholics to express the virtue of patriotism in a way which is not blind to our flaws at all.
Yeah.
But is actually hopeful and imaginative about what America has been and what America could be.
Well, it does seem to me that many of the people who the Catholics I know who most love their country are also most implicitly critical of it, for example, in being pro-life. So there's not a sycophantic, I just love my country, right or wrong. No, I love my country. Yeah. And sometimes she's wrong. And you don't hate your country because she's wrong. You work really hard to get her to be right.
That's right. That's because you love the truth more than anything, right?
Yeah.
And you want your country to be conformed to the truth. I once had someone ask me in a public setting, do you love America? And they asked it very critically because I think I wouldn't accept that America was destined to always and forever be a Protestant country. And the suggestion was that I didn't truly love America because I didn't love her as she was. And I my response to that is that's absurd. If you love someone, if you love yourself, your family, or any like community, you want that community to be raised up in accord with truth.
Amen.
Right? Yeah. That's all you want.
Right.
That's all you want. And that is the purest love for anybody. That's the purest love for your children. You want them to be conformed to God's truth and God's goodness and God's beauty. And you want that for your country, too.
Well, if I may go back to the roots then, because if we really are and I accept the premise, if you're going to pick a day, 4th of July, let's celebrate that day.
Yeah.
That's fine. But if we're going to do that.
It's Independence Day. We call it Independence Day. We don't actually call it America's birthday so much as
there you go.
We call it our independence from the British Crown. And I think that's legitimate, right?
So let's talk about that, the form of that independence for a minute from a Catholic perspective, if you give me this, because you cannot separate that from the person of Thomas Jefferson, who writes that about nature and nature's God and writes about inalienable rights. And when I think there's a reasonable way in which you could say you don't end up with Thomas Jefferson talking about rights coming from God and about humans having inalienable rights without, for example, the Spanish Jesuit tradition, without the Augustinian tradition, the Thomistic tradition, that none of this happens without the Catholic Church having reflected on the human person for, 1,700 years before it actually happened.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I mean, I think this... I think so. I think, in some sense, there's so many different layers to this, but that all of the founders are drawing down the capital of Christian civilization that, goes back.
What
millennia.
A wonderful, it's like there's a bank account that they're drawing on.
Exactly.
I gotcha.
And they're drawing, and maybe some of the accounts they draw from aren't held in the central account, right?
Right, yeah.
But Jefferson's a great example of that. His deism, Jefferson actually thought that America would be Unitarian. He thought that Protestantism would give way to Unitarianism and that Catholicism would never take root in America. That's what he thought. He thought the future of America was Unitarian. And this is so interesting because when Alexis de Tocqueville came and he observed America and his year abroad, one of the most interesting aspects of that book, Democracy in America, is in the second part of it, in which he reflects on Catholicism in America. And he takes up this idea that America could go in a Unitarian direction, which is what Jefferson thought. Like, this would be a flaw in our view, right? This
right.
would be a deep, deep flaw of America. If America was
right.
deeply inclined to Unitarianism, well, that would show that we were flawed from the beginning. But Alexis takes it in a really interesting way. He says, actually, the thing is that Protestantism is unstable. It's almost like a John Henry Newman type of argument. Protestantism is unstable in America. And it can go one of two ways. It can either go Unitarian, as Jefferson thinks, or it will go Catholic. It will revert to original Christianity.
Wow.
And this will be the future of America. It's the most fascinating prophecy. The prophecy is that Protestantism will get evacuated. It'll either go, he calls it pantheism as well, that it'll go in this pantheist Unitarian direction.
Good Lord, that describes a lot of the public religion.
Wokeism,
yeah, all of that.
Progressive civic religion, it describes all that. The Protestantism, you know, the mainline, the collapse of the mainline into all of that. It will either go that way. Well, he actually doesn't say will either go. He says it will split into two parts. This instability within Protestantism will split into two parts. One part pantheist, one part Catholic.
Okay, we've got to come back to that because you can hear the music. I have to take the break. Dr. Chad Pecknold is our guest. He's got a new book out, Fire on the Altar, from Emmaus Road Press. It's a Eucharistic approach to St. Augustine's Confessions. Fire on the Altar. Get it from Emmaus Press. We'll talk more about being Catholic in America on this 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence.
Why do we baptize? Does it really do anything? In Baptism Now Saves You, Dr. Carlo Broussard explains the unbreakable relationship between baptism and salvation, making sense of the Church's teachings in a way that is easy to understand and ready to share. St. Peter said, "Repent and be baptized, every one of you." Discover what that means today. Order your copy of Baptism Now Saves You at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Why do Catholics pray to dead people, bow to statues, venerate relics? And where do we find any of this stuff in the Bible? In the delightful book, The Saints Pray for You, Dr. Carlo Broussard convincingly defends the ancient Christian belief rooted in Scripture that the saints care for us, that they are allies. Order your copy of The Saints Pray for You today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. So happy to get to talk with Dr. Chad Pecknold. Some of the best conversations I've had here at Catholic Answers on America, on our civic life, all that have been with Dr. Pecknold. So he was the first person we thought of when we said, let's do a special show, a conversation about America and Catholicism, or America from the Catholic perspective might be a way to say it, for the big 250th anniversary. So Dr. Pecknold, thank you very much for making yourself available to do this with us. Now, as we're recording this, you have not yet, but you are going to go down for a world record-breaking, an expected to be world record-breaking 4th of July fireworks display in Washington, D.C. That's what you're looking
forward
to.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to have a traditional barbecue, and then we're going to head down. Once it gets dark, we'll head down, to the mall, to the Washington Monument, actually.
Will there be hot dogs at your barbecue? It feels un-American if there's not.
I think there has to be hot dogs. I was planning on burgers, but now that you mention it, I better add some hot dogs.
I think you better.
I don't want to be counted as un-American.
On the 250th anniversary of our country.
I got to have hot dogs.
You better
watermelon.
Have Yeah, you got to have all watermelon. That stuff. It's so funny how, like, potato salad, watermelon, there's just certain things that go with our, well, I guess because it's summertime, that go with our celebration. But, yeah, you better have those. We were talking a little bit about de Tocqueville's prophecy, really, that America would split in two directions. And I wonder if what he would say about the rise of Islam now, if he were to consider it, because that does provide a third option, but a kind of pantheistic, I don't know if you watered down Christianity would be one way, and the other would be Catholic. You need something stable as a Catholic. So let me ask you this. I think a Catholic future for America is actually possible. And I don't think it would violate her founding principles. I don't think it would mean creating a new country. I think it would mean her reaching her potential to become a Catholic country. What do you think about the possibilities and what that would mean for the identity of the country?
Well, look, I think we have to hope that, and we have to hope it and work for it, really, because Christ tells us to make disciples of all nations. Yeah. It doesn't say... Some don't have to, you know, you don't have to try with some. Now, obviously, some nations like, you know, China, if I was Catholic in China, I would think, yeah, that's probably not going to happen in my lifetime. But you couldn't ever rule it out, I think, in some deterministic way, because our Lord commands it. So that's one. I think... if you think about the Constitution, if you think about obstacles in our form of government, I don't think there are any substantive obstacles in our Constitution or our offices of government that would prohibit a country that was cognizant of the truth of the Catholic faith.
Yeah,
which is about all I can ask for any government, is just to be cognizant that the Catholic Church is the one true faith, and there's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits that. You could say that, you know, obviously the state isn't going to establish the Catholic Church as the official religion of the United States, but it could prefer it,
and
it could show preferences for it.
But has the Catholic Church changed? Because at a certain point, she would have said that every country, the official religion must be. Now, maybe I'm misinterpreting what Catholic teaching was, but it seems to me that there was a sense that in an earlier time of the Church, it was in fact the Church's expectation that as people became evangelized, the Catholic Church is the Church of the state.
Or it is the one true church that every nation. The traditional teaching is that every nation has an obligation to God, just like every soul has an obligation to God, has a duty, including a duty to worship, and that once you know that the true religion is Christianity, and that the proper form of its worship is in the most holy sacrifice of the Mass, then you have no reason not to have a state which is cognizant of that as true religion. Now, what that would mean in terms of, you know, establishment, and whether or not establishment clause would prohibit a traditional Catholic understanding, I think that's something you could dispute. Your question about whether or not the Church has changed on it touches on Dignitatis Humanae. Dignitatis Humanae is a very, very important document from the Second Vatican Council period, which seems to give a blessing to liberal democracies being separated from religion entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Secular. But the very, very interesting thing about that is that the first paragraph of Dignitatis Humanae says that the traditional teaching is left intact.
Yeah, right. I know people forget that. They forget that first.
And so if the traditional teaching is left intact, then it's probably the case that the traditional teaching is still intact. that nations still do have a duty to God, and they still do have a duty to render what is due to God in its public worship.
Yep.
That means not putting up a pride flag outside the White House. That probably does mean saying Merry Christmas. It probably does mean, you know, masses sometimes being said in the White House or Congress, right? It probably does mean those things. That's what I think a traditional Catholic view would be. Now, is that achievable in this very moment completely? No. That's not achievable in this moment completely. Is that something that that Catholics should hope for or work for? I don't see any way around that.
But
I think unless you want to say there's a rupture, that Dignitatis Humanae actually ruptures the traditional teaching and says actually the traditional teaching is no longer intact.
You really can't say that and be Catholic.
I mean, don't see how you can.
No, or you have to either or reject the document, which is I think what the
SSPX.
Society of St. Pius X. I think that's the fundamental bedrock problem is a rejection of that.
It was
document.
More important than liturgy to them.
Sure,
that was was more important than liturgy. I mean, now everybody thinks it's liturgy, 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 and it is liturgy. But the originating separation was just over Dignitatis Humanae.
But where is the? It seems to me that there has to be some room here to not just say, you know, God demands this or God demands that, but that there is space here for human creativity in working out our relationships with one another and institutional relationships, and that there are probably ways of the church relating to the state that we still have yet to imagine, that don't violate the tradition, but also they don't become complete innovations. But there's a creative – sometimes I feel frustrated because I feel like it's always looking backwards of, you know, what can history tell us about how we're supposed – but no sense of, well, the Holy Spirit's working. There's got to be some creative accommodation, and that's going to mean changes on the part of the state, certainly. But the church is going to learn things too, that it's okay to let this go, but you can't ever let this go.
Yeah, and I think the church has always been creative with states.
Yeah,
like for its whole history, and you know, like the recent encyclical of Pope Leo XIV's recent encyclical on AI is so interesting to me. I was on a panel recently, and you know, it's 39,000 words. It's a very long encyclical, and you know, someone asked me what I thought the purpose of it was, And one of my answers, I gave a few different answers to the question, but one of my answers has stayed with me, which is that the purpose is kind of what the purpose is of a lot of encyclicals, which is to speak to the world, to speak into the public square, and to come alongside temporal rulers. Now, tech CEOs are temporal rulers now. They're kind of like princes. And that I said that the encyclical is kind of doing that. It's the Pope coming alongside the temporal ruler and helping the temporal ruler be oriented to God, right? And the church has always been very creative at that, coming alongside, and sometimes that involves correction, sometimes that involves condemnation, but sometimes it involves just what you're talking about, imagining, using the imagination. And using the tradition, bringing out things old and new to say, actually, what is good for tech companies? What's good for tech companies should be what's good for human beings and what's good for nations. And similarly, when the Pope is coming alongside, you know, presidents or prime ministers or kings or emperors, it's the same sort of thing. What is good for the people, what's good for your country, what's good for the Christians in your country, what's good for the church. And this is precisely what I think Catholics need to do, what indeed the Pope should do. We don't need bishops who are constantly in conflict with statesmen. We need bishops who are ready to engage in those creative conversations about how we can find concord between the truths of our country and the truths of our faith.
It is one strength of the Catholic Church that she is not wedded to a particular form of government, that she's wedded to justice, that it, that government must be just, whether it's corporate government or, civic government, whatever it is. It's got to be just, but she's not, she doesn't demand a form of government.
Yeah. And I think that's true. Obviously there's intellectual preferences for mixed regimes and,
sure.
Balance between powers and rule of law and all of these things. The mirror of princes tradition always says that justice is the one requirement for a ruler to be happy. And so it's not like indifference. The church is not indifferent to how regimes act, but you're right in the sense, in the very specific sense that, you could have various kinds of mixed constitutions, right? And yeah. The church isn't going to say one is better than the other.
Dr. Chad Pecknold, our guest, we're talking about America at her 250th. Anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. We're talking about the Catholic way of looking at that, at understanding it. If you said, what's the Catholic history of the United States, you'd say that's a mixed history as well. You'd say the whole thing is mixed, that Catholics have everything from being persecuted and having convents burned down and having Catholic schools made illegal to the glories of having Catholic presidents and senators and Supreme Court justices and moms and dads and champions of every aspect of society. So it's a mixed story. We'll talk a little bit about that and maybe ask Dr. Pecknold about what should the life of a Catholic citizen look like now, given the situation that we have, that we're facing in the real world today in the United States. More with Dr. Chad Pecknold as we celebrate the birth of this new thing that we're doing here. I don't want, you got to be careful of the language you use, but this strange thing in the history of the world, but also a strangely familiar thing called America. We'll continue with our conversation about it right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
There's only one Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
One of the biggest mistakes a Christian can make is to try to do good without God's help. Saint Therese said, when we trust only ourselves and not God, our soul becomes incapable of virtue. Her remedy? Works of charity. And the greatest work of charity is to share the gospel. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we encourage you to share the gospel with someone who doesn't know Jesus. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. StreetEvangelization.com.
Hi, this is Father Mike Schmitz. I invite you to listen to Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year here on EWTN Radio. On Bible in a Year, we're reading all the way from Genesis through Revelation, plus time for explanations and reflections to help us go deeper into God's Word. Encounter His voice and learn how to live life through the lens of Scripture.
Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year with Father Mike Schmitz. Tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. And a new course at the Diocese of Arlington. Boy, the Diocese of Arlington has a sterling reputation. And our guest, Dr. Chad Pecknold, doing a course called Christian Citizenship and the Virtue of Patriotism. Is it something people can connect with virtually? Like they can go on the internet and find the courses? Or?
Yeah, it's a really interesting initiative. From the diocese and from Bishop Burbage, they can go right to the website and they'll find the link and they just register and they can do, I think there's 10 lessons.
Okay.
They're really short lessons though. And then there's questions after the lessons. They're like 10 minute lessons. So you can do it in a day.
Could a family do them?
Or do it slowly over time. A family could do them. Yeah. Because the lessons actually touch on the family quite a bit, so they'd be very good for a family to do.
It's the Diocese of Arlington, Christian Citizenship and the Virtue of Patriotism. Dr. Pecknold also has a new book out from Emmaus Road Press called Fire on the Altar. It's a Eucharistic approach to St. Augustine's confessions from the one living human being who has actually read all of St. Augustine. I don't even think Augustine read all of St. Augustine, but you know what? I actually don't think Augustine read all of Augustine. I think if you read all of Augustine, you would have read more than he read of it, because some of it is people wrote down his sermons. So he was delivering, unless it was him that wrote them down, then I would be wrong. But it's a large body of work, the Augustinian corpus.
Yes. It is like 5 million words or something.
Is it really 5 million words? Good Lord!
There are more works by Augustine than people. There are more words by Augustine than people have any idea of what those works are called. All they know is City of God, Confessions. Maybe they know on the Trinity. Maybe they know on Christian teaching. But most people don't know where most of his words are.
But is it through your reading of St. Augustine that you became interested in this relationship between the Catholic faith and the political sphere, or did you have that interest and so you turned to Augustine? What's your own biography in that regard?
Yeah, my own biography is that when I first... I came from a lapsed Catholic family, and then I became an evangelical, and the first theological book I bought was The Essential Augustine, edited by Vernon Bork. And that was my only theological textbook as a brand new Christian in my teens. And I just stayed with Augustine. And it was in reading The City of God and having a Eucharistic kind of epiphany and reading The City of God in book 10 of The City of God, in which he talks about the church becoming the sacrifice through the sacrifice of the Mass, that I became Catholic.
Wow.
So Augustine was part of me becoming Christian and then really essential to me becoming a Catholic. And you know, for a long time, I've wanted to sort of capture the Eucharistic dimensions of Augustine's thought, and Scott Hahn asked me to do it with Confessions because it was taking me too long to do it with City of God, and so I wrote this little book to do that, and I hope it's helpful for people.
So we have Saint Scott Hahn. We have Scott Hahn.
Saint Scott Hahn. I actually believe that will be one day declared like servant of God, then venerable.
Yeah, really?
Blessed.
He's such a great service to the church, great service to all of us. But what another great service in getting you to get a book done, Fire on the Altar from Emmaus Road.
Only
Press.
Scott could do it.
let me ask you a question about the current moment. Here we are on the 250th anniversary of the Declaration, and we can't lie to ourselves. We're in tough straits as a society, as a country. I mean, we're in tough straits. And this theory was proposed to me, and I'm going to propose it to you and let you take it in any direction you want. And that is that in some ways the Cold War held the country together, in that because we had this common – we were fighting against communism, and we had a kind of national story of being the – you know, the shining city on a hill of standing up for freedom, for liberty, for humanity against this evil, really evil ideology. But that the collapse of the communist side of the thing in 1989 and following left us grappling with fundamental questions about who we are in a way that had been postponed by the fight against communism. And that now we have reached a point where we are actually arguing about very basic political realities in a way that we weren't, say, in the 60s and 70s. Do you accept that theory of where we are?
I do. I think that's correct. There's a phrase that's circulated for about 15 years now around this idea of a cold civil war. that we've settled into a cold civil war. It's not a hot civil war, but it's a civil war over two radically different visions of what America is and what sort of people should rule. We are in that cold civil war. I think there are those who then believe, I understand why they believe, I don't agree with them, but there are those who then become very deterministic about that and say, we're over.
Yeah.
And I understand that feeling. I really, really, really do. And they'll say the very forms of the nation state are corrupt and we can't participate, or that America's done, it's finished. A lot of blackpilling for all sorts of different reasons. But I actually don't think that the Catholic is permitted to blackpill. The Catholic is not.
Could you just tell me what blackpill is? Blackpill means
just total pessimism. Just total pessimism.
Go dark. Yeah. Like, okay.
We're done here. We're all done. And I totally get that feeling. I totally get that feeling where you might look at the intractable problems. You know, the Cold War was kind of gave us all a sort of common enemy. And then once that was, you know, fell apart, then we realized that we were at war with ourselves. Right.
Yeah.
And I think we have been at war. We are at war with ourselves. There's no doubt in my mind that we're at war with ourselves. And so the question is, well, how will we have a great future together? And I think we need good leadership. I think we need Catholics to lead. And I would think we need Catholics to have a very big vision of America. And I think we do, one side has to win in this civil war.
And what at the, it's not just pro-life against pro-choice or transgender and LGBT against non-LGBT. There's something more fundamental. Can you just point me in the direction of how deep does this go? What's the fundamental question we're fighting over?
I think two things. One is we're fighting over our fate. We're fighting over what is the faith of the country. Is it? And we can have a pretty thin view of that, right? We can say the faith of the country is either something like the Progress flag or the Pride flag, or it's like the cross, right? Those are the choices, and we are in a deep kind of crisis over what is the faith of the country. What do we believe in? And then the other thing that we're in is at the core of everything is what is a nation? What is a country? And I think we have on the one side a view that the country's an idea. It's something universalizable. It's something that can be anything everywhere all over the world versus... No, a country is like this very particular people, language, set of customs, habits, mentalities, and faith that has been willed by God, given by God, and needs to be safeguarded by the people. And those are the two kind of a we're debating over what the faith of the country is and over what the country is.
Now tell me,
I'm
sorry I've only left you about a minute for this, but tell me, how does the Catholic respond then to this moment in the life of the nation?
Well, I mean, I think the most important thing is that they not give up on the country. Pope Leo XIII said that Catholics would give America her best citizens, and that Catholics are at a really unique juncture. And I also would say that bishops need to take very seriously this, that they need to take very seriously the duties of their apostolic office to work with civic government, to work with temporal rulers, and to be creative and not to be conflictual, to seek concord, to seek the peace of America.
Dr. Chad Pecknold, it's always such a gift when we get to have you on. Happy 4th of July to you.
Happy 4th.
Enjoy the giant fireworks that you are going to. And I hope we'll have you on many, many, many more times. Thank you for your reflections on this anniversary of the Declaration of Independence.
Thank you very much, Si. Always a pleasure.
I'll tell you what, we're going to continue our conversation on America and being Catholic here. An immigrant to America come in, Dr. Marcus Peter, born and raised in Malaysia, and now a big deal in American Catholic radio, in the American Catholic scene. And we'll ask him for his views on the 250th right after this on Catholic Answers Live.